The world is running out of drinkable water. The United Nations forecasts that global freshwater demand will outstrip supply by 40% in 2030, just 4 short years away. In the UK, government figures suggest that England will face a shortfall of 5 billion litres a day in public water supplies by 2055, with a further 1 billion litre a day deficit for the wider economy. Climate-driven water scarcity and drought, population and industry shifts, pollution and aging infrastructure are all playing a role. But positive things are happening today. Countries, regions and communities are working with the public and private sectors to safeguard their precious supplies of fresh water. What are the challenges they're facing? How are they improving and developing infrastructure to reduce leaks, treat water and enable reuse? And how can innovations help close the gap between the water we have and the water we need? In this episode, we're joined by Sian Thomas, Director of Strategic Asset Management with Anglian Water, one of the largest water companies in the United Kingdom, serving more than 7 million people across 14 counties. She's joined by John Keightley, Divisional Director for Energy, Water and Environment with Skanska in the UK. Sian and John, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Thank you.
Sian, can we start by asking you to describe Anglian Water? It's a very big company. Tell us a little bit about what you do and give us a short overview of your asset management and capital investment programs.
Of course. So Anglian Water, as you said, serves 7 million customers. That's about 15% of the population of England. We've got over 6,000 employees, 5 key shareholders, and we are the largest water company by geography in England and Wales. Our region is pretty special in that we are 75% of the area is agricultural and 28% of our region is low-lying in comparison to sea level. And we're pretty flat. So we do an awful lot of pumping water across the region on a day-to-day basis. It's also a really important region for the UK in terms of growth, and projections are that we're going to see more than 700,000 more people in our region in the next 20 years. In terms of our programme, asset management plan for this 5-year period is about £11 billion. Pounds, and of that, about £7 billion pounds is capital, and about half of that £7 billion is delivered through the Act One Alliance, which Skanska are a key partner in. It's double what we've spent in the previous 5-year period, so it's a really exciting but challenging time for us as an organisation.
Mm. John, very briefly, could you describe Skanska's work in the water sphere in the UK and even internationally?
Yeah, certainly. So Skanska have been in the water sector in the UK for over 20 years. We've worked with Anglian for that entire period of time. Our work in the UK supports the capital investment programme and the asset renewal programme. So we work across a really broad portfolio of wastewater treatment and now start to do more nature-based solutions. And perhaps we'll talk about those later. Globally, we're doing some really interesting things. Over in Finland, we're also doing wastewater treatment centres. And then over in the US, we've done loads of schemes about sustainable water use and grey water reusage as part of our built environment schemes, as well as just wastewater. So we've got a really established footprint, loads of really good innovative work going on.
Back to you, Sian. We've seen government figures that suggest that England will be facing a shortfall in public water supply of nearly 5 billion litres a day by 2055. The Anglian Water area historically receives some of the lowest rainfall levels in the UK, and some water companies reported shortages during 2025. Can you give us a brief look at some of the most important effects that this could have on communities and on industries in Anglian's area and more broadly in the future?
2025 was, in fact, the driest spring in the UK for 132 years, I discovered recently. I think it's really important just to reflect that certainly in the UK and many developed countries, we really take water for granted and we just turn the tap on and sort of expect that it's going to be there. Just that ability to use kind of as much water as we want. And so I think it's really difficult to imagine what that means for us until something terrible happens. And so what we've been doing as Anglian Water is kind of trying over the many years to engage with customers around being really smart about how they use their water and being quite engaged in the impact of kind of extra water use on the environment and what's available. And I think we have some advantages as Anglian Water because of the nature of our region and because of the nature of agriculture in the region. People kind of understand water. And so we've had quite a lot of good conversations with customers and folks that we work with around the importance and how sort of essential it is to daily life and business.
Getting specifically to these challenges that we're talking about, what's causing these problems with the water supply?
So climate change has a huge impact in terms of the amount of water that is available in the environment and how quickly we can capture it and whether or not we can store it for long enough to then put into supply. One of the challenges we have in the UK is lots of our, certainly in our region, we rely lots on groundwater. And in order to support the environment, we're seeing restrictions in the amount that we're able to abstract from the ground. So that's kind of reducing the supply that's available to us. And in terms of kind of how we deal with rainwater when it comes, if you look at development across the UK and sort of urbanisation more broadly, what happens is the rain falls from the sky, we've got lots of hard surfaces, and so the water runs off ever so quickly into rivers and ultimately out to the sea rather than soaking through into the ground. Mm-hmm. So lots of challenges sort of coming from that supply piece. But then on the flip side, demand is also sort of pretty challenging in terms of people's expectation of water being available, industry that uses lots of water, and then people just really needing to kind of, you know, acknowledge their relationship with water and acknowledge kind of how they can be really sensible and sort of cognizant around how much they use. So one of the things we're really proud of at Anglian Water is around our sort of coverage of meters. So how many households actually have meters in place. And nearly 60% of our customer base now has smart meters installed. Mm-hmm. So similar to in the energy centre, 60% of our customers can actually see how much water they're using on a live basis and then make different choices and decisions around it. And we're hoping that we'll have sort of over 2 million smart meters installed by 2030. I guess the other thing that's really important in the water industry is around leakage. So we as water companies have got a huge responsibility to make sure that our pipes and our assets are in good condition to keep as much water in the system as is possible.
Mm. John, perhaps I just touch on that as well. Some of the work that Skanska's team have been doing with Anglian as part of the Alliance has been around a program where monitoring stations and digitization is put into the water system so you know what is flowing where in terms of water volumes, and then you can start to make informed decisions about where there could be leaks, how to intervene, what the throughput is from the facilities. And that data is invaluable because then you can start targeting your interventions, you can look at where your capital expenditure is going to go. And we're now getting to a place supporting Anglian in that mission to get the most amount of data you can get so you can really make your investments sort of value for money and make sure you spend your money wisely.
Mm. I'd like to continue talking about these measures that are being taken to safeguard the water supply and also what's being done on the wastewater side of things. Sean, what's Anglian Water doing in these areas?
So in the UK, we have quite well-established frameworks for water resources management. So every water company in the UK has a WRMP, so a water resources management plan, that we update on a 5-yearly basis, and then we keep pace with the work that we've promised to do in those WRMPs. And Anglian have invested heavily as a result of our WRMP over the last 5-10 years in creating more resilience in our region. And one of the big investments that we're making at the moment is our strategic pipeline. So what's that doing? That is going to do for us is enable us to connect the northern area of our region with some of the more water scarce southern areas and eastern areas of the region so that we can move water from where we have it to where it's more scarce. But then we're also looking through this AMP period and into future years to develop options for two large reservoirs, which my team are in the process of kind of developing. So one in the Fens and one in Lincolnshire. We're also looking at desalination options. So we've got quite a big coastal region. So can we desalinate seawater and put it into supply? And then we're also looking at some options around final effluent reuse. So where we take water that's been treated through a wastewater treatment plant and enhance that treatment to explore putting it back into supply. From a wastewater perspective, it's probably been the poor relation for several years. I have been super fortunate that I worked on Tideway, so the super sewer, which is a sewer that runs under the Thames through London, which was constructed to intercept the combined sewer overflows that after just a couple of millimetres of rain would overflow into the River Thames. When we were developing that project kind of 15 years ago, the thought of people wanting to pay to clean up the river was pretty challenging. But actually in the UK now, if you read headlines and talk about pollution and what happens when water escapes from the water company's pipes, it's a completely different story. So there's much more interest in what we're doing. And of course, the right thing to do is to protect the environment, keep sort of wastewater in the pipes where it needs to be, and make sure that you're treating it as well as you can before you sort of release it back into the watercourses. So we've got records amounts of investment in our wastewater treatment facilities and networks through this asset management period to help us kind of get in good shape around that.
The way you're describing it, Sean, it's a very complex system in the UK. I mean, you've got a lot of different stakeholders and from landowners to consumers to industries. Could you explain a little bit about how this complex system works?
Of course, and I'm sure John will have some experience in this. But if I try to sort of simplify this complex world, so... you know, water is so fundamental to life, and it is such a key part of the environment in which we live. Everybody's got some kind of interest in it or views on how things work. So whether that be from us as Joe Public, who kind of interact with our own homes and turn on the taps and flush our toilets, whether it be how we interact with the pavements and the roads around us, drainage, so surface water drainage in the UK is sort of owned by maybe a local authority, maybe the Environment Agency, maybe an independent drainage board, maybe a different flood authority, which might be a different landowner. And so there are many, many people that have different kind of parts of the puzzle in the UK. So we interact with all of those folks, and the Environment Agency are the environmental regulator who have kind of fairly key role to play, as well as interacting with developers and people that are kind of building new developments and what have you. What we want to do is try and influence them to make sure they're reducing the amount of surface runoff and they're dealing with water at source and they're using sustainable drainage systems when they're building from fresh. So very complex worlds. And one of the things we're pretty proud of at Anglian is our approach to partnership and working with others to kind of convene people to say, well, if we've got a particular problem in an area, how do we work together to solve it? But John, you've got lots of experience too, I think, with different stakeholders.
Yeah, and I think as you described, Sean, that if you look at the responsibility for water as it falls from the sky and then hits land, that sort of custody of the water changes, doesn't it? So you might have, if it's raining in a field, then that landowner is responsible for that water management. And they might be part of a wider group that we call a drainage board in the UK. And then they might feed into an estuary, which then becomes the Environment Agency. And then when it gets to the coast, it becomes some. So it's quite a complex sort of pattern or mosaic of these different sort of responsibility holders. And of course, for us in the built environment, from a Skanska point of view, we also have that moment when we're constructing. So we're trying to manage where water goes during construction, which can be really challenging with things like silts and what have you, and trying to protect them, the waterways and some of the other natural habitats. So it is complex. And I think what people perhaps underestimate sometimes is that all of these things are being managed in parallel. So yeah, it is complicated. And I think it's probably not appreciated by most people that, as Sean said earlier, you just turn the tap on and really that's the end of the thought process for most people. But actually it's quite a long sort of chain of custody, if you want to call it that.
I'd like to go back to when we were talking about all the different stakeholders that you mentioned. I find that fascinating, the mosaic that you mentioned, John. Mm. Can we talk briefly about what those different stakeholders can do to contribute here? I mean, you talked about the drainage boards and so on and so forth. What can all of these different groups do to try and improve water management?
I think from a built environment perspective, there are lots of ways that buildings can be designed to try and reuse, retain, or get water, storm water as we call it, so rainwater, back into the groundwater again. So one of the projects that Skanska did over in the US, for example, for the Georgia Tech Institute, they built a huge tank, basically a 50,000 gallon tank. and they collect the stormwater and they let that permeate, sort of infiltrate back into the ground so it doesn't have to go into the closed system and then go through all the processing and everything else like that. And although that's only one example, and that building was sort of an outstanding building in terms of its environmental credentials and sustainability, there are things like that that could be done on a smaller scale or more sort of commonly. I think the other thing as well is, from a domestic point of view, that there are loads of opportunities in sort of normal dwellings, if you like. So people just, simple things like collecting rainwater in barrels and whatever you use in your gardens, using grey water systems, we're doing new housing development, surface water, not having hard, like Sean alluded to earlier, having hard surfaces everywhere so the water runs off and enters the sewer system. So from a built environment perspective, there's absolutely loads. From a landowner perspective, I think there's also a really big consideration and contemplation about how quickly the water runs off the land and gets into the estuaries and into other systems. So there are lots of things that can be done, either built environment or natural habitat. They're all one system, aren't they? It doesn't differentiate. The rain doesn't really care where it goes and what it's getting into. But lots of things can be done, and actually lots of small interventions can have a much larger impact than there is no one sort of like magic solution.
One of the opportunities we have with that is actually building some of the grey water thinking as we're building new houses, as we're building new towns. And Anglian have been working with other water companies through an Ofwat Innovation Fund on something called Enabling Smart Water Communities. And that's really, if you had a blank sheet of paper and you weren't constrained by the way in which the water industry works in the UK so far, what would you do to make best use of water, to use as little as possible, and keep that community sort of integrated in its kind of water catchment and its water world. So some really exciting findings coming from it. And the challenge for us now is to actually implement it in new developments and new towns as they're growing and as the UK sort of addresses its growth agenda.
Wow. Smart water communities. We definitely want to follow up on that one. John, a little bit to turn to you. I mean, Skanska's been working with Anglian and the At One Alliance for more than 20 years, I think Sean said. What role is Skanska playing in the work that Anglian's been doing?
Yeah, so we've got a team of about 190 people working with Anglian on the Alliance. So our team work across lots of different disciplines and job role types. We have everybody from undergraduates right up to very senior project directors, a delivery director leading one of the programmes of work. And that team is relatively unique in the sense that we blend Skanska's staff with the seven other partners that deliver the programme. And they are a sort of a rainbow team. So every project will have representatives from all of the eight partners involved in some aspect of the lifespan of the project. We draw on design specialisms from some of the partners. And in Skanska's case, we do everything from early work in the design phase. We do lots of temporary works design with our internal departments here in the UK. And in delivery, we've got project management, engineering, and then one of my team, for example, look after the transition where you go from capital delivery into usage. So we're involved sort of every part of the process. And as you said, we've been on it for a very long time. So the model is very mature and our team are very sort of attuned with Anglian and how the system works and also how Anglian work as well.
Fantastic. Now, to both of you, we've been talking about a lot of the innovations that are coming in here, the smart water meters, the way that communities are structured here. Mm. But there's also a lot of innovation going into the actual technology that's being used here. Could we have a look a little bit at how new technology is helping achieve Anglian's goals for these projects and how it's also reducing the climate impact of the construction that's being carried out?
One of the quite exciting things that we're doing at the moment is using, I guess, technology that's available to make sure that all of the as-built drawings and the documents that our sort of delivery teams have produced over the last kind of 10 plus years are actually in a format that our operators can access in relation to their specific assets. So just using kind of AI and technology to get that in good shape is a pretty simple idea, but actually it's really, really sort of helpful and will drive things forward. One of the other things I think Anglian and At One and the Alliance are really proud of is some of the work that we've done on carbon neutrality and kind of driving to reduce carbon in construction. And John's probably going to describe this much better than me, but just some of the stuff we've looked at in terms of, well, do we need to use concrete at all? Can we use different additives in that concrete? I think we've even done some 3D printing of sort of modules in order to reduce the amount that we've been using. So I guess kind of just sort of extremes of a very sort of seemingly sort of simple kind of data and information sort of tech piece right through to some pretty big civil engineering that has made use of technology to reduce our impact.
Yeah, I suppose just a few examples of that. So as Sean mentioned, we've done recently done some 3D concrete printing. We've done that with a company called Hyperion Robotics, who are a Finnish company, so a bit of a Nordic flavour in the UK there as well. So we've basically 3D printed one of our below ground chamber structures. And you sort of say, well, why do that? What's the benefit of doing it? Well, most of the products that we buy are in that sort of regard, so chambers that go below ground that have pipes going into them. This is the place where they sort of coalesce and then get redistributed. They are standard products, so they're quite often not the ideal solution. They are made to fit because they're a proprietary product. What the 3D printing enables us to do is build exactly what is needed and nothing more, nothing less. And that gives you the efficiency in terms of using materials just as much as you need to. So that's one example. And we've been doing that last year. Some really good results. So I think there'll be more of that to come. I think the other thing to mention, the inclination now is to always look, go, AI must be the answer, or some other sort of stroke of wizardry must be the answer. But actually, some of the nature-based solutions that we're starting to look at now are a sort of an innovation. It's back to the future in some ways about how you remove nutrients that are usually removed and extracted through chemical process and other treatments. And that's enabling innovation in a different manner.
Yeah, and just to build on, so we're using nature-based solutions in terms of what we can deliver and what we can deliver with our alliances. But one of the other things we've done as Anglian Water as part of this business plan is put in an advanced WINEP program. So an advanced water industry national environment program that we're pulling together. But our advanced WINEP is all around innovating with partnerships and with others to say, can we use local river trusts to help us with nature-based solutions? Can we engage with local communities around how they're using water differently? Or can we engage with those local communities to put sort of sustainable urban drainage solutions in place? So we've got funding in this AMP to do that. And that's all about experimenting to try and find different ways of working with others to deliver the benefit that comes from nature-based solutions and other ways of dealing with water.
Wow. Amazing things happening. I had extra questions about for real world examples and where we're going, but you've answered them all.
Yeah. I think I've already got one more example that we've completed in 2025. So there's a scheme called Everton Wetlands. So Everton is near a town called Bedford. We're in sort of the western part of the Anglian area, really. Everton is a wetlands habitat scheme. Its purpose is to remove nutrients, so particularly phosphorus, which is one of the major chemicals elements that you take out of the water, because if it gets into the waterways, phosphorus can lead to algal blooms, sort of clog up the rivers and the waterways. They deprive the rivers of oxygen because they use up the oxygen in the water, and that's bad for the habitat and the life and the ecology in the river. So phosphorus is removed along with nitrogen, and Everton is a series of settlement ponds that are planted with species that are sort of selected to remove those nutrients. And so what that's enabled us to do is take a piece of relatively low yield agricultural land, which has been purchased by Anglian off a farmer. We've built these two wetland habitats. It increases biodiversity. So you've got this sort of win on top of the necessity of doing the scheme. And we've planted over 100,000 plants in a series of settlement ponds. And that water will go out into the local waterway and be treated without the need for chemical dosing and things like that. It's just an example of the sort of schemes that we're doing and how we're trying to use less sort of like, you know, chemical and sort of manufacturing sort of process type treatment of water in pursuit of getting water quality and also more affordable solutions that can be delivered.
Mm. Back to those nature-based solutions that you were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
That covers everything that I was hoping to talk to and more. So thank you both very, very much. Sean Thomas and John Keitley, really great to have you on Shaping Sustainable Places.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As we heard, we often take clean water for granted. But the well is at risk of running dry. 2025 brought the driest spring in the UK for 132 years, for example, which is why stakeholders are taking action now. The challenge, though, is anything but simple, with a complex mosaic of stakeholders demanding joined-up thinking across both water supply and wastewater management. The solutions combine new ways of thinking and new technology, from structured data and 3D printing to nature-based solutions and closer collaboration with communities. Engineering and the natural environment working together to protect this vital resource for the future. Thanks to our guests, Sean Thomas from Anglian Water and John Kiteley from Skanska in the UK. And thank you for listening into this episode. Please follow us on your favourite platform and let us know your thoughts, either on the Skanska Group channel on LinkedIn or by mailing to podcast@skanska.com. That's it for this time. I'm John Ambrose, and this is Shaping Sustainable Places.